Hello, friends. Welcome to the Hope Canteen Podcast, where we look at one of the readings for the upcoming Sunday for insight into our walk with Christ. This is our 23rd episode of the podcast. My name is Steve London, and I am joined, as always, by Stephanie London and Michael Rolfe. Thanks for taking the time today to help me figure out this reading that we're doing. Just before we start, I'm wondering, is there anything new going on with you or the same?
Right, for us, it's about the same. We're a little nervous about the fact that it appears like we're moving into the next phase of the COVID, and wondering whether that's going to mean more lockdowns or whether we will be able to continue the way we have been, because life has been a little more open lately for us. So we'll have to wait and see.
I've had the exact same question as well. I think what I've really been grasping on is this beautiful fall weather. So I guess I'm trying to soak it all in before the real cold and the snow comes, and hopefully not a lockdown, but just in case, I'm extra soaking it in.
I know a lot of people are concerned about the winter, and that's a big thing up in the air for me as well. But I got my first quarantine haircut yesterday, so that was a little bit of a lift.
The first one since March.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. On this podcast today, we are going to look at a small bit of a letter written by the Apostle Paul. If you would like to read the snippet before we get going, you can pause the podcast here. Turn to the book called The Letter to the Philippians, chapter 2, verses 1 through 13. In this snippet that we're reading, Paul is writing to a small church in what today we would call Northern Greece. Back then, they would call it Macedonia. Paul is actually in prison at this point, and he's writing to the church to help them to understand that just because he's in prison doesn't mean that the gospel is failing. God, in fact, is using his imprisonment to spread the gospel even further. So this letter is meant to be an encouragement to the church. And in the piece that we're reading this today, he is trying to get the congregation to put away their differences and personal agendas and have the same attitude and the same love. In fact, he encourages them to be like Jesus, what he calls having the mind of Christ. Well, what is that, the mind of Christ? Well, Paul illustrates this by using an early church statement of belief. We don't think he wrote this statement, but he's using it as an illustration. And in this illustration, we see that Jesus, who as the Son of God was by nature God, but gave that up, emptied himself, the text reads, and became by nature a human, a person, but still more, emptied himself even to the point of death on the cross. And because of this great act, God has exalted Jesus and given him the name above every other name, so that at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow. Then after quoting this early statement of belief, he encourages the church to continue working this out with what he calls fear and trembling. Quote, "For it is God who is at work in you, enabling you both to will and to work for his good pleasure." As always, there's a lot in here. I'm glad I have Michael and Stephanie to help me talk through this, but it strikes me before we get started, it might be that some of our listeners might not know much about the Apostle Paul and how important he is for the Christian faith. And Stephanie, if you wouldn't mind, maybe just give us a brief introduction to who the Apostle Paul is.
Yeah, so normally when we hear the word apostle, we think of the 12 disciples who were with Jesus when he was alive and who came to be called apostles when they received the gift of the Holy Spirit. Paul isn't one of those original 12, but we still call him an apostle because although he didn't meet Jesus face to face, he did meet Jesus in a sort of a dramatic vision, and then he also carried on the work of the apostles. Apostle just means sent. So if we take the Greek word and translate it into Latin, that gets us to the same word that led to our English words mission and missionary. So it's someone who is sent out. Paul started out not as a Christian, but as someone who was really zealous for the Jewish faith. He was so zealous that he actually persecuted some of the early Christian believers for introducing what he thought was a heresy into the religion. And he was present at the death of the first Christian martyr. But then Paul has, he was named Saul at this point, but then he has a dramatic conversion. The Bible doesn't say he was knocked off his horse, but that's one of the images that is present in Christian art. Coming from that dramatic conversion moment where he meets the risen Christ on the road, he becomes just as zealous for Jesus. So Paul is responsible for writing almost half the books of the New Testament. Our theology and the early shape of the church comes from the Apostle Paul. He traveled all around that area and established churches in Asia and around Greece and the Holy Land and all those places. And then he wrote these letters to them to encourage them and to build their faith. So that's what this letter to the Philippians is. It's one of these letters that came from Paul and would have circulated around to deal with issues that the early church was having and to encourage them in their faith.
Great. Thanks so much, Stephanie, for that introduction. Michael, was there anything in particular you found interesting about this passage?
Well, I found it interesting. The commentators say that this is that the letter to the Philippians is a more loving letter. The other letters that he wrote to Corinthians, for instance, was to really scold them a bit for the behaviors of the community. Whereas in Philippians, he seems to be writing to friends, writing to people. They've sent help to him. They've sent an emissary with help when he was now that he's in jail, and he's appreciative of that. And I think the tone of it seems to suggest that he appreciates the way in which they are reflecting Christ. There's a little bit of dissension, apparently. There were a couple of women by the name of Euodia and Syntyche. I think that's the way you pronounce it. And they were obviously at odds over their interpretation of the faith. The thought is they may have been like deacons in the church, and they just couldn't quite get along. We read more about them in chapter 4. But generally speaking, he seems quite appreciative of the way in which they are, in fact, showing Christ in the way that they live. And so this is an epistle that encourages them and just wants to draw out what they are already doing.
Mm-hmm. I would echo all of that, and I'm actually very grateful that we have this passage. It's one of the most famous in the New Testament because it gives us some real insight into early Christian understanding of who Jesus was. And in fact, if Paul hadn't have written this letter, we wouldn't have had this little early statement of belief. So I find that quite profound. It says some really profound things about Christ.
Yeah, I always find that this is just such a beautiful hymn describing the work of Christ. And I think, oh, that would be actually kind of neat to be part of the early church where they got to sing this.
The reason we think that they may have sung it is it actually has some poetic elements in it. The poetry doesn't quite work in Greek, but the speculation is that it might have been in Aramaic and then translated by Paul into the Greek. One of the things that it says is that, so it's talking about Christ. Let me step back a little bit to find what I find most interesting about this. When I think of the word discipleship, what is that? You know, living our whole life with Christ. I think Paul really sums it up, having the mind of Christ, trying to be like Christ, to have the same attitude, to have the same love, to have the same approach to life that Christ does. And Paul calls this having the mind of Christ. And then he shows what that looks like in this passage.
Yeah, it also ties into what you were saying, Michael, about this conflict that is mentioned later in this letter, that Paul is saying part of imitating Christ and part of having the same mind as Christ comes out in how we act towards other people and in unity, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. And that's not one of those things that's easy. We touched a little bit on conflict a few weeks ago, if you heard that episode of the podcast, but something that's one of the places where we can practice imitating Christ is how united we are with others.
Imitation is an important concept here. I mean, it for some people, it's tempting to sort of impersonate Christ in the way they lead their lives, but that's phony. Imitation is real and genuine. It's the sort of behavior that shows that Christ is part of their existence. Christ is active in their lives, and that's the important thing here. as we imitate Christ, we reflect him to other people without scolding and without necessarily correcting. We just simply live our lives in a way that shows that Christ is active in us.
Mm-hmm. And that comes from a transformation at the deepest part, having a change of mind, in a sense. That's very internal, and it comes out of that, out of having our insights transformed.
Yeah, I like what you said both about the imitation and the transformation, because I think they go together for Paul. There is this image of descent and ascent in this passage. We have this idea that Jesus was in the form of God and did not regard equality with God as something to be exploited. And that's going back to this idea that Jesus is the second Adam. So the first Adam was the one who wanted to be like God, but wasn't, but strove for that. And Jesus is the opposite, who was in fact by nature God, but descended, left that. I love this word, emptied. Kenosis is the Greek word. And going all the way into human pain and suffering out of love, because that's what the cross is, right? The descent of God's love into our pain for the healing of it. And Jesus does this. And once this healing is accomplished, he is exalted and given the name above every name. And just an interesting note about that, as I was doing my research on that, that actually comes as a quote from Isaiah. And Isaiah is actually proclaiming, this is to the Babylonians, that God is the only God, that in fact there are no Babylonian gods at all, that there's only one God, and that to God every knee will bow. And the fact that this early statement is applying this to the man Jesus, that's quite a profound statement.
Yeah, so that just goes to show us just how radical Jesus is, because if someone was God, if someone had all the power of heaven, you'd expect them to be pretty excited about that and to make a big show of that. But God, as we see God through Jesus, that didn't matter at all, in a sense, that this emptying motion is characteristic of who God is, not being power hungry, not being exploitative. But we might even say this is the core, one of the core values of God's character, is emptying and descent and being in solidarity with we humans who are, you know, weak and outside of relationship with God and all those things. It's a really radical statement to say that about God.
One of the ways that I try to understand this emptiness, to me, it's a real sign, as you were saying, Stephanie, of what it means to say that God is love. Because, of course, before creation, if we can say before creation, God was everything. And one of the questions is, does God control everything? Because God is all powerful. And I actually take from a Jewish tradition that the way God allows us to have free will is that he withdraws that power. He withdraws that ability and allows things to happen as they unfold, that we have the opportunity to have freedom, that we have the opportunity to be in relationship, that God makes room for us. And this is out of love. He wants to be in relationship. So he has to empty himself to make this space.
I think likewise, when we're talking about the conflict between these two women, when Paul urges them to be of the same mind in the Lord, it's asking of them that same dynamic, make space for each other. If you're going to listen to someone else, you need to make space for them. If you're going to make compromises and work together with someone else, you have to make space for them. And I think that's one of the things Paul is saying is Christ-like in this, having the same mind.
David Bartlett, one of the commentators, says that Paul is reminding his congregations more generally that what looks like their own good work, even the humble service that they give to each other, is really God at work in them. And that's the unifying thing here. That's where as he appeals to these women later on to be of the same mind, it's because it's always God that is at work in them. They're not doing it. God is working through them. And that's the important thing.
I love that image. That's actually probably a good place to stop, because I think that's actually what Paul is really, really trying to get us at. So as we come to the end of the podcast, I'm just wondering, as always, we ask, what do we personally take from this reading that speaks to us today?
For me, it's a reminder that God is alive and well in life, even in these difficult times. God is participating, and the good that we we see happening throughout the world in various places is a signal, a sign of God's presence and God's activity in the world.
Yeah, I guess mine would be similar to that, that wherever we see people acting out of compassion and sympathy, I'm just looking at the first few verses here, not doing things from selfish ambition or conceit, or moving towards other people in humility and love and selflessness, that's to look and see where God is working underneath that and behind that to bring about some real transformation in the world in these quiet inner ways that reflect outwards.
I think for me, Michael, I'm glad you brought up that David Bartlett quote. It strikes me that that is what hospitality is, this creating space for other people to come into our lives. And in that space, God is working. I just think when I invite people over to my house, I step back from my normal routines. I step back from my normal control and give them a place where they can feel welcome and in a place. And something very special happens there. In a course over a meal. So it strikes me that that's part, not the fullness, but part of what Paul means by having the mind of Christ, that in fact, hospitality, creating a space for other people to have a place at the table, I guess.
Yeah, and it would be worth reflecting on, I guess, because when this quarantine is over, we're going to have all the people over.
Yes, that's
right. But when we can't actually open our homes to people, how does that hospitality show up? What sort of attitudes and ways of speaking and ways of being with other people reflect that spirit of hospitality, even when we can't meet around a physical table?
Great question. Well, thank you so much for listening to our podcast today. We always enjoy making these podcasts. If you have any thoughts about this letter from Paul, please let us know at revstevelondon@gmail.com. Until next week, we'll talk to you later.
See you soon.
Bye for now.